Welcome, everyone, to Family Talk. It's a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute, supported by listeners just like you. I'm Dr. James Dobson, and I'm thrilled that you've joined us.
Well, welcome to Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. You know, every January, Christians all over the country celebrate something known as Sanctity of Human Life Month. We celebrate it here at the James Dobson Family Institute. We dedicate this month to defending and protecting the most vulnerable among us. Well, on today's edition of Family Talk, we're going to share a powerful conversation from our broadcast archives that goes all the way back to featuring Dr. Dobson having a conversation with three women who were on the front lines of the pro-life movement in its infancy. Dr. Julie Parton, a pregnancy resource ministry director, along with Darlene Norberg, former director of the Dallas Pregnancy Resource Center. She would later become a consultant for the Option Ultrasound Program. And Tammy Schaefer, who served as director of patient care at Choices Medical Clinic in Wichita, Kansas. The discussion is going to center on the power of ultrasound technology, not just for tracking the health and growth of babies in the womb, but also as a life-saving tool. Statistics show that a high percentage of women, between 80 and 90%, once they see the ultrasound of their preborn child, make the decision to carry that pregnancy to term. But they know that if an expectant mother sees a picture, that ultrasound sonogram picture of her child in the womb, as much as 90% of the time, that woman will choose life for their child. The second reason why this program is so important to us is that Dr. James Dobson was the driving force behind recognizing Sanctity of Life Month in the first place, all the way back in the 1980s. And so now, when you see what happens with ultrasound technology and see the way the abortion industry fights against it, we know that Dr. Dobson was a catalyst for bringing that change to the public square. Now, during the next half hour, you're also going to hear Dr. Dobson's former co-host, John Fuller, as part of this conversation as well. The stories you're about to hear remind us why this battle for life matters so deeply to all of us, but especially to our founder and chairman. And without further ado now, let's hear Dr. James Dobson.
This outreach to babies and to mothers on behalf of their babies, that concerns all of us a great deal. Tammy, tell us what it is.
Sure. Choices Medical Clinic is right next door to Dr. George Tiller, internationally known late-term abortionist. We're divided by a fence only, and we see people from all over the country coming into Wichita to abort their babies.
Mm-hmm. And many of them in late term.
Mm-hmm. He starts his late term procedures on Tuesdays. So on Tuesdays, we see license plates from all over the country.
Mm-hmm. That and must women, break your heart.
Mm-hmm, women with protruding bellies walking in.
And, oh, my. And some of them walk across that parking lot and come to Choices. Why do they do that?
Well, probably several reasons. One probably being that we have a banner that faces his parking lot that says free ultrasounds today. Mm-hmm. That brings a lot of them over. They have to pay for an ultrasound there, plus the fact that we've had a couple that have come over just because they paid him for one, but his sonographer would not show them the screen. See, they have it figured out over there already. They won't show them the screen because then they'll see it's a baby and they may walk out.
Yeah.
And we had one particularly that stands out in my mind that came in from out of town to go have an abortion at his clinic. And she decided to come to us first because she saw us when she was driving around trying to figure out where the clinic was. She came to Choices, and I counseled her, and then we did a sonogram. And she left Choices Medical Clinic 15 minutes before her scheduled appointment time with Dr. Tiller. And she still had not made a decision for life. And I came out just like dragging and just about bawling. And one of the counselors, Diane, said, "Well, Tammy, you did everything you could short of, you know, laying on the floor and holding on to her ankles." And I said, "Well, is that legal?" But the next morning she called me, and I said, "Well, how did everything go yesterday?" And she said, "Well, you know, actually it went well." And I said, "Well, how are you doing?" She said, "Well, I know this sounds really silly, but I was over there and I was in the lab having some blood drawn, and there was a poster of a koala bear hanging onto a tree. She said, and it reminded me of the sonogram you had shown me and that my baby was holding on for dear life, so I got up and walked out.
Oh,
and I was like, woohoo! And we were so excited. He thought, you know, God can use a koala bear poster.
How many sonograms have you done?
Approximately 3,000.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. You're a nurse, aren't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Does it still give you a thrill to see that baby?
Oh, yeah, it does. They're amazing. They do funny things. They all have their own personalities and everything already in utero. And you can tell who they look like. Not all babies look alike in utero. And I look at some of the pictures, and you can tell exactly who they're going to look like. And it's amazing. But they suck their thumbs. They swallow. I even see them empty their bladders, and that always freaks us out. They kick around and move around, and they, you know, scrunch their eyebrows and smile and do all kinds of things in there that just, it's amazing every time.
Yeah, it's meaningless protoplasm, right?
Isn't
that what they told us? You may be a little too young to remember that, but in the beginning, that's what they said.
Mm-hmm.
And every child, a wanted child. Right. Once those babies are born, they're wanted.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that when you couple the ultrasound with materials that you share with them and in the counseling room, it just drives home what they just learned in the counseling room a few minutes before.
Yeah.
And it puts it all together, and they're like, wow.
Darlene, I mentioned earlier that this is not an easy assignment, that there's a lot of stress associated with it, a lot of disappointment, a lot of exhilaration, too. What has been your experience in those 10 years?
Wow. It has been the most life-changing 10 years, and not my own life, watching other lives change. I guess probably the most exciting thing is when we added ultrasound. We did that back in 98. We were actually the sixth full-time medical clinic in a pregnancy resource center in the nation. And watching how that changed the dynamics of our services and the dynamics of women coming in and what we were able to offer. And when these women would see their babies on the screen, and you would see an automatic, almost a bond where they wanted to bond, but sometimes they wouldn't because they were concerned about, if I bond, then do I abort?
Mm-hmm.
And but the personal stories, that's what really touches your heart. You come to really, in just an hour's time, 30 minutes time, just really love these women and their partners who come in.
And many of them fall in love with those babies too, don't they?
They do. They
Isn't
do.
It amazing that you can see the temperament and the personality of a baby through a sonogram?
Yes,
can you really do that?
Oh, it is so exciting. And the nurses who are just so good, because I'm just an innocent bystander. I just get to stand and watch and just pray that these babies will wake up and jump and twirl around and put on just a fantastic show. But the nurses who do this all the time, they're able to clue in. And it's so funny if the baby's asleep and they'll take the transducer and just kind of jiggle the mom's tummy and say, come on, wake up, wake up. And it's amazing how women who have a positive test and know that they're pregnant can actually put aside realizing. And a client story to share with you is my own personal involvement with a client was a young woman who was a sophomore in college and knew that she was pregnant, but just totally put it out of her mind. Didn't share it with anybody other than the young man, the father of the baby, and waited nearly 5 months before she told her mom and dad. Mm. And one night she just decided.
Was she scared?
She was scared, but what she told her parents later was that she could make her mom and dad angry about different things, but to disappoint them was one of the hardest things for her to face. Mm. And she finally, after about 5 months and completely no medical care, nothing, and at that point would have been feeling the baby move, and just felt that she just had to finally call and tell mom. And she called her mother one night, and her mom just sensed that there was something going on, that there was something wrong, and she said, you know, things are real quiet here in the house, and I'm just going to sit here and tell me what's going on. And that's when my daughter.
You are now the grandmother of that child?
I am. Mm. I am. My daughter called me that night. And she said, I knew something was going on. And I said, sweetheart, there's nothing going on at the house. Dad's gone. Dad's at Bible study. And I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to be still because I know there's something that you need to tell me. And two very, very long minutes went by. And Amanda, my daughter, she said, Mom. And I said, what? She said, Mom, I'm pregnant. And I said, I know. I want you to come home. We're going to work through this. We're going to be fine. Come on home. She was at her apartment.
Yeah.
So she came home, and that night we promptly took her to our medical clinic and had an ultrasound. But it was a very different experience for me because I had always stood there as that innocent bystander, yeah, wanting that mom to bond with that baby, and all of a sudden, I'm seeing a baby within my baby. And it was the most unusual experience in my life. But the ultrasound, what it did for my daughter personally, was up until that time, Amanda should have been feeling Kinsey, our little granddaughter, yeah, move within her womb. But she had put it so out of her mind that she didn't feel any movement. And she said, Mom, the night that you did the ultrasound, when I went back to my bed that night and I laid down, I felt her move for the first time. And it's just amazing what our minds can do.
Were the tears flowing?
Oh, my goodness gracious. They were. Oh, it was just a mixture of emotions, yeah, that you just can't begin to imagine until you walk through it. Ended up that Amanda had hypertension. And we had a very early little girl who was born. Amanda was on bed rest, had to quit her job because she was a sophomore in college and decided not to go back to school, got a job. Had to quit her job, came home, moved back in with us, was on bed rest, and soon was in the hospital on bed rest. And at 32 weeks, Kinsey was born. Mm-hmm. 3 pounds, 13 ounces. Yeah. Precious, precious little girl. And they gave me the privilege of being there watching my granddaughter be mm-hmm. born. And the wonderful redeeming part, so many redeeming parts of the story. But Chris, our son-in-law now, was incredible support to her. We watched him come over at night where we hadn't really known him very much at all. He'd come over at night, and after Amanda had been in bed or lying on the couch all day long, he would rub her ankles and just, we got to see him love her and support her and encourage her.
Julie, I want you to elaborate on what we're up to here. We came to our board of directors, and especially Don Hodel, our president here. I'm now chairman of the board, and I'm no longer president. But we together came to the board, and we said, we have an opportunity now to save babies, lots of babies, if we can put these ultrasound machines in the various clinics, as many as we possibly can. And this will be a very expensive project, and it's one that involves not only machines, but training, and you're going from a non-medical to a medical setting, and it involves physicians, and it involves maintenance and insurance and all kinds of things associated with that. And we presented that to our board, and we can sometimes talk for 4 hours about something new. I mean, to tell you, it was lightning.
Yeah.
And they said, let's do it. And we're off and running, right, Julie?
Well, it truly is exciting. I know we overuse that word, but that's just how everyone feels about it. And what's been really neat is to see the centers that have said, oh, my goodness, we've been wanting to do this for a long time, and we just didn't have the money. Or we've been wanting to do this, and our board was reluctant, but now realizing that we're ready to go back and look at that again. And so I think there are a lot of ramifications of this that, besides just helping centers purchase machines. Mm.
There are roughly 2,300 pregnancy centers in the United States, and our best estimate is 350 are medical. And so what we want to see is those who want to add medical services, we want to be able to empower them to do that.
And Darlene, by medical facility, you mean they are equipped with an ultrasound machine so that they can provide sonograms, as you and Tammy have shared, that
That's
can make
exactly
all the
right.
difference.
Exactly, yes.
You know how all of these years, men have been told it's a woman's body, it's a woman's choice. Men, you're supposed to just stay out of it and say things like, well, whatever you want, dear, I'll support you in this. Mm-hmm. And I have seen so, just in the phone calls that I've had, you know, along the lines that you were talking about, so many men that see this as something that they can do, a way that they can get involved, because they can give money, you know, or they can help in some other way to make this a reality. And I think it is going to help, I hate to use the word liberate, but empower maybe is a better word, to help empower men to understand I may not can counsel at a pregnancy resource center because it's women clients, you need women counselors and so on and so forth, but I can sure help make that ultrasound capability come about.
Do you find that it has an emotional impact on men as well as women see that baby?
I got to tell you, you all
did a demonstration for 1,500 people in our chapelteria. We have a chapel service once a month, and sequestered behind the screen was a young woman who participated in an ultrasound. She is pregnant. Her baby was how far along, Judy?
17 weeks.
17 weeks.
And quite active at that.
We all saw that baby live right there on the screen, cavorting and turning and twisting and turning and sucking his thumb. And it got to me, John.
It was an emotional moment. We had a lot of folks that that went online and heard some of the audio that we shared from that that chapel with listeners. You know, ladies, as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, I'm not sure that we've said statistically what difference an ultrasound makes. This is
good
much
point,
more.
John.
This is much more than a pregnancy test that comes out positive. There is a statistical difference that an ultrasound can make in a woman's decision.
The percentage of abortion-minded women who change their mind after seeing their child on ultrasound is about double. It about doubles the percentage of young women that change their
mind. Twice as many babies saved.
We had 636 that were abortion vulnerable or undecided or abortion-minded, and 29 aborted, and that's a 95% carry rate.
And to what do you attribute that, Tammy? Besides good counseling and the Lord's intervention.
Definitely the ultrasound.
And without that, the numbers are much smaller.
They are. One of the things that I saw when I was counseling as an executive director at the pregnancy center is we have been equipped with some of the best materials, the pictures. But when you're showing a woman a picture of a baby in utero, you're educating her. But when you show her a picture of her baby, it's all of a sudden her reality. And that's very different than it being an educational reality. It's her reality now.
Marilyn, one of our board members, I often hear her say, God hardwires women to have a bond with their baby, whether it's an unwanted pregnancy or not.
And the only way to keep that from happening is not tell her, not let her know. You know, there are times, and this is one of them with this project, that I can just feel the Spirit of the Lord hovering over this place and smiling, you know, and saying, you did well. That is the greatest thrill of all, is to feel like you have cooperated with Him in one of His purposes. Way, way back, 1977, I knew there was something close to the heart of the Lord about this issue because I couldn't talk about it without crying. And I would
still
speak.
Can't.
I still can't. I'm fighting it today. I would speak to thousands of people across the United States at that time. And when I would bring up this issue, which didn't have a lot of support in those days, you know, it wasn't like the sanctity of life movement that's out there today. And I would try to describe it, and it would just come over me. And I knew that the Lord was saying, this is what I want you to do. And I am thankful. I'm thankful for all those that are doing what they can to save those babies. It is a worthy cause. John, I don't think a radio program has ever gone by faster.
No, I was amazed when I saw the clock.
I looked up at the clock and said, no, I don't want it to stop, because you all have so many stories to tell, and there's so much passion around this table today. Mm-hmm. You know what, John? I'm not going to stop. There is too much to tell. Mm. And I think we need to do another program. I had planned for it to only be one day. But how can I not reach for what's here around this table? All the experience, all the love for babies, all the love for women in the heart. So if you all will be so kind, we will pick it up next time. And I deeply appreciate you being here, Tammy and Darlene and Julie. It's a pleasure to have you here. And Julie, thanks for all you're doing to make this conference possible.
Oh, it's totally my pleasure.
All right. We'll talk again next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, seeing the light come on in a mother's eyes when she realizes that there's actually a precious life growing inside of her, well, that's what this work in the pro-life community is all about. And friend, you're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. We're featuring a classic conversation that Dr. Dobson had with his guests, Dr. Julie Parton, Darlene Norberg, and Tammy Schaefer. Now, the broadcast you're listening to today, which is simply titled Saving Babies Through Ultrasound, is a classic that we've never aired before here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. And so hope you've appreciated this. And if you want to hear more of this conversation, you'll want to go to our website at jdfi.net. You can hear this program again, share it with someone you love, and get ready to hear part two of this broadcast as well. Now, the conversation you heard today represents something deeply personal to Dr. Dobson's legacy and to our mission here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. For decades, Dr. Dobson championed the cause of the unborn, speaking up when few others would, and crying out for those who had no voice. That calling didn't end with his passing. Every day, the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute works to defend the most vulnerable among us, advocating for every baby's right to be born and standing firm on the biblical truth that every human life bears the image of God from the moment of conception. You know, your partnership allows us to continue this mission. And when you support the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, you're ensuring these conversations reach mothers and fathers wrestling with difficult decisions. You're helping us share biblical truth with a culture that desperately needs to hear that truth. In fact, the number of women who don't realize that abortion is ending a human life is staggering. And yet, as Dr. Dobson and his colleague, the pro-life doc, Dr. Bill Lyle, used to say, a person is a person no matter how small. With a nod to Dr. Seuss, of course. Now, as we look forward to this new year of ministry and impact, we are counting on friends like you to pray with us and stand with us. And you can make a secure donation online when you go to jdfi.net. That's a new website for us. Same classic material, just an easier handle to get a hold of. The URL is jdfi, James Dobson Family Institute, .net. Now, keep in mind, you can also call a member of our constituent care team. That number is 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. And you know, every day here on the Family Talk broadcast, we share powerful stories of faith and family, and we have carefully selected the very best of these broadcasts literally from the past 15 years and gathered them together on our 2025 Best of Broadcast collection. This is a highly anticipated resource that features timeless conversations that you'll want to revisit again and again, maybe share them with friends and loved ones who need a word of encouragement. And we still have copies available as a 6-CD set. It's our way of thanking you for your gift of any amount in support of the James Dobson Family Institute. So to request your copy, go to jdfi.net. That's jdfi.net. Or call us at 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. If it's easier, you can write to us. Our ministry mailing address is Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, P.O. Box 39000, Colorado Springs, Colorado, the zip code 80949. From all of us here at Family Talk and the JDFI, thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in again next time for part two of this powerful conversation about saving babies through ultrasound technology. It's coming up right here on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, the voice you can still trust for the family you love. This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. Hi, this is Roger Marsh. In our digital age, technology can both connect us and challenge us. That's why the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute is here to help you navigate those complex times with wisdom from God's Word. When you're feeling overwhelmed by parenting challenges or seeking biblical guidance for your marriage, our resources provide the practical help you need right when you need it most. Through our daily broadcasts, timeless books, and digital resources, we're here with you every step of the way. Thank you so much for partnering with us. Together, we're building a legacy of faith, family, and freedom that will endure for generations to come. With today's Dr. Dobson Minute, here's Dr. James Dobson.
Is there any way to avoid the blues during and after the Christmas season? It's a good question. Holiday blues are rooted in a natural rhythm common in human beings. It occurs following a busy holiday, or a new baby, or a job promotion, or even after a fast-paced vacation. You see, anything that produces an emotional high will set the stage for a later low. The bottom line is that we can and should brace ourselves for the blahs or the blues or whatever we call mild depression. It helps to be forewarned that we're likely to feel depleted for a few days when the excitement of the holidays is over. It also helps to know that when the depression has run its course, another high will take its place. Such is the rhythm of the human experience.
For more information on this topic, visit drdobsonminute.org.